Hello and welcome to 102.5 AA Radio, not Academic Agent, but Apu Apu Jasta Radio. My co-host today is the ever faithful Lewis. Thank you for being here again, Lewis. A cult fan favorite. Quite a lot of people liked our engineering patter. So today we're gonna. Well, first of all, I wanted to say smash cut right in. You don't know who Vernon K is, do you?
No, I don't. I'm a retard.
Because he was the token Northern radio presenter in, like, the 2000s. If it was, like, late 90s, I think it was late 90s, it was that early. I'm not actually sure. Vernon K was definitely around the early 2000s, though, a fixture. And I was going to say that if we did, like, a Northern radio show, it would a little bit, you know, it would be a little bit Vernon K, but you're a Zoomer and you have no idea who Vernon K is. That's our introduction today.
I'm
also,
poor.
The weather has been awful, by the way. The weather has been terrible. The weather has been rainy and rainy again and hailstone and then rainy. We've had storms here. It's been awful. So those of you tuning in for the weather report, it's pelting it down. Good Lord. How was it your end, Lewis? The viewers like to know.
It's actually been not too bad. We're absolutely pissing it down yesterday, pretty much all evening. And I went to the gym in that. That was fun. We had an odd good eight. And then today we're pissing down about midday, and then the sun decided to come out. But there's chemtrails in the air, so there's I can look forward to a shite grey scale tomorrow. Joy.
Chemtrails. Chemtrailed again.
It's on the signpost. Chemtrailed again.
Chemtrailed again.
I can just see him outside.
It's
the
just
window.
Piers Corbin looking sad. You know? Sad Piers Corbin. Chemtrailed again. You know, I've supposed to had dinner with Piers Corbin twice, and twice there's been, like, personal disasters that have befallen me. I think he's cursed in some... I don't know, it's probably pure coincidence. I'm a bit busy these days, so travelling down to London's a bit of a sketchy proposition for a dinner with a bunch of kooks, let's be honest with you. But I've been meaning to meet Piers Corbin for a while because he's in, like, a what? I don't think it's too much to say he's in a WhatsApp chat that I'm in, because he's in quite a few WhatsApp chats, and he likes shilling in them. he's a big shill poster, is Piers Corbin. Again,
Piers Corbin being the brother of Jeremy Corbin, correct?
Yes,
it is the same one.
Yes,
yes,
that
right,
is.
Okay, that's
kind
that's
of
very bizarre.
Yeah, it is very bizarre. Really, we found ourselves in proximity to Piers. He's a lovely, he's a very earnestly insane gentleman, I think, and that's why he comes across as, like, a harmless idiot, and I think that's because he is. But I mean that endearingly. I mean that as endearingly as it can be meant. Because England used to be full of harmless idiots, now it's full of harmful idiots and harmful clever people. But we're not here to talk about that today.
No, we're here to talk about biscuits.
We
actually.
Are here,
we're here
actually.
To talk about biscuits.
This is some audience participation, guys. You know, we've been having a discussion because we were talking about rich tea versus hobnob, specifically with a cup of tea, I believe. I think that was the context.
Yes.
There's
yes.
tea.
You could have it with coffee if you want to be a bit, you know, extravagant.
If it's the morning, I mean, you've had a rough night before, I'll allow you a coffee. But if it's 3 p.m., don't have a coffee. Have a cup of tea. Don't have a coffee. You'll regret it later. Your stomach will be burbling and you'll be jittering a bit. It comes 6 o'clock, you'll regret that 3 o'clock cup of coffee. Have a cup of tea. I implore you, working Britain, have a cup of tea. But with your cup of tea, would you rather have a hobnob or people putting bourbons? That's cheating. Bourbons aren't in this because bourbons were immediately good ones. But hobnob or rich tea? A bourbon's a different proposition. That's a chocolate biscuit. That's for special occasions. That's for weekends, you know? As for tea on a weekend, is the bourbon. Party. Who's saying party rings? That's boo. But boo you, party rings. That's what you get. That's like kids' birthday party. Are you having tea at a kid's birthday party with party rings? Plain hobnobs. Ah, right, you didn't specify. Are we talking original hobnobs? Are we talking... Because the caramel hobnobs are very good, but again, they're a very indulgent biscuit. You're a hobnob, are you? What type of hobnob are you? Oh dear, I'm afraid Lewis has disappeared. His connection appears to have dropped for a second, but I will. It's fine. I was mostly filling time to collate the answers from the audience. I've got Jaffa cakes. I've got digestive biscuit. Yeah, I hear the party rings. No. People talking about the custard creams, homemade custard creams. Yeah, homemade biscuits is a good answer. That's a very wholesome answer. And kind of to segue into some of our points, it kind of brings us to our first little point here, which is this is going to be a slightly more positive stream. It is positive, practical, and realistic solutions. So what we have, now what we have here is Lewis again. Hello, Lewis. He's back, folks.
So, apologies. Yeah, I had a technical difficulty. Boomer moment.
Boomer moment. It's fine. I was just introduce. I was taking the opportunity to the intro and segue us into what we're actually talking about, which is.
I missed the tea discussion.
It's no, we're rounding it up now. I'm going to have a look in a couple
Oh,
minutes because
okay.
people are still talking about them, and we'll get. To be fair, no, I'm very disappointed in you guys. None of many of you have not participated earnestly in the process. This is why votes are binary. This is why they gave you a like yes no thing on Brexit because they gave you an open
This is
question.
democracy
Yeah,
made
we'd be
manifest.
talking for days. Gentlemen, this is democracy. Come on, rich tea, hobnobs. Let's have it. Rich tea or hobnobs? Gun to your head. but while we're doing it, people saying they're very zero biscuits. That's very Soviet of you. How very like
Don't
gentian,
like oh.
just green tea, no biscuits, comrade. Maybe some rice and a little rat meat.
Rat meat. Oh, that's a bit, you know. I was
it's
thinking more like a protein block.
protein. Oh, that's a bit more pod. I was thinking more like North Koreans in the bush. But no, if you guys want to support us,
Okay.
the best. Kind of YouTube tax-free way of doing that is through the Ko-fi, although you can also buy book. So I will, you know what? God damn it! My control button got clogged there. I'll put them in the chat. The best two way to support us are the pinned message there. But yes, you can help us out by buying book. We still have the buy book promos here, and it's now in hardback. I keep telling people. A lot of people are very, very insistent on having hardbacks. So yes, it's now in hardback. But that's the customary shilling out of the way, apart from to say that we are actually still more fully monetized on YouTube somehow. So there's all the range of options there. I always make the joke about super stickers, and someone always sends one, like Lamented Guide did for $9.99 there. Thank you, Lamented Guide, for demonstrating the point. Anyway, kind of straight into it, really here. We'll save this question for later. A big thing that I wanted to tell people is just that, like, relax, chill. We're trying to have a bit more of a level-headed stream because the political temperature has been elevated to such a degree that people are whipped up into a frenzy. And we've been kind of doing this shtick for a little bit, but we'll remind people that you can only do what you can do. And you only have actual control of what of the people, you know, not control of, but you know, influence over and control of the events within your immediate environment. So your actual real life and the people that you know is the only area you can exert control on, really. So a lot of this stuff that's happening far away from you, all of these, you know, I wish I wasn't living through a world event is the meme, but that's just brought to you by social media, by the internet, which is, as we insist repeatedly, is an informational weapon. You don't need to partake in all of this. You don't need to be in at an emotional fever pitch. You don't really need to comment on things if you don't feel you want to. A lot of people feel that it's almost like a mirror of democracy. People feel the need to participate in the quote-unquote online right, but really, you don't need to. You don't need to participate in all of this, and you can only do what you can do in your real life. And as we've been saying for a while now, the state of Britain isn't your fault. Absolve yourself. You are under no obligation. You aren't in power. You didn't do this, and so this isn't your fault. A great positive solution is to drop all of that, because a lot of people really just do take the weight of the world on themselves, and it's not your fault, and it's not your responsibility. But when you put that down, when you dust yourself off, when you look around of what actually is there in real life. There are things that you can do in the immediate term that don't require a lot of resources. They don't require a huge amount of time, some of them, and some of them are just as simple as community building. I won't link to them because they've been basically under assault by a bunch of people trying to get in who they're trying to vet. But there's obviously a local basket weavers as promoted by Hope Not Hate. Consult your local shady looking right wing guy. No, there are community groups all around Britain. If you interact with people who are part of our communities, you know, make the right handshakes. I'll tell people, you know, get into them the right way. Get to know people, get talking to people, show up in real life to events if you can. You know, not protests, but private events that aren't patrolled by the police by default. Because, you know, that's one of the big differences is a big positive solution you can do is gather with people in private, and doing a private function is kind of the gold standard of that. That's what we did for our Nomos events, as we'll talk about Peppered in this. But if you have a private function with people, that's very difficult to disrupt. That's very difficult to monitor. And a protest is not. It is extremely open to that because that's what all the laws are structured around. So a big positive solution really is to just be in each other's lives as well. But again, you shouldn't worry about the fate of the world because the fate of the world isn't your responsibility. You are just a person. And don't listen to the internet. The internet's lying to you. Lewis, what are your thoughts?
Nothing to add.
Are you still sour about the biscuits? Tell you what, I'll have a quick look at the chat.
I'm sour
there.
About the biscuits. I'm very sour because I think that's joining in, Mac. I was going to talk about putting whiskey and stuff in your tea or coffee.
Nice. We're going to go back to that actually. We're going to go back to that throughout right. Because it seems that Hobnobs is one. Nobody actually seems to like rich teas. Well, I said
Hobnobs.
you were so disappointed. Oh, I want to talk about the biscuits. No. We're not going to not talk about the biscuits. Don't worry. As I say,
yeah. But is it two or three biscuits?
It depends how hungry you are. If it's basically a breakfast, have three biscuits. But otherwise, just have two. You're greedy pig.
I thought that was degenerate, though.
Three's a bit much. If you've not got time, just have like a cup of tea and a couple of biscuits and eat later.
It's such an old reference. That.
That's a very old reference. It's fine having a brew for breakfast though, but yeah, you're gonna say that it'd be very Vernon Kay because yeah, we were talking off air about the fact that yeah, do you have whiskey in your morning tea? Do you haven't your coffee? And like I said,
if you have coffee, you don't have whiskey. You're supposed to have cream whiskey. But if you're gonna have cream whiskey, what I can recommend is a whiskey from the valleys. Is
Welsh whiskey?
That was an awful accent. Really? Yes, it's Welsh. It's from Llandudno, when I went there on holiday with my family, and it's next to the Orme in Llandudno, and I think it's called Pendirin, I think, and you can order it. It ships internally within Britain itself. They do single malt whiskies, and they also do an Irish, well, it's essentially a Welsh cream whiskey instead of an Irish cream whiskey, and it's called Merlin in a black bottle.
Well, yeah. Again, as we've got, there is a link back here. Actually, don't worry. I've actually come up with one. We came up with this discussion on the fly, but it works really well because British nationalism is quite difficult because Britain actually is about like biscuits and cups of tea on a certain level. It is. It is about having a nice time. It is about forming an orderly queue. It is about things being right, things being proper, things being orderly, things working, and being good. It's difficult to do. It's the fish in the water, but it's very difficult. There is a degree of excellence that the British come to expect at every level because they got used to it.
Sandwiches.
Yes.
It's like your sandwiches. They're meant to be triangles, you know, on a platter, and you have your cakes separate. You don't put them together. They're separate, and you keep them separate.
Yes. That impulse, though, is one of the best things to pull on because I won't kind of talk about exactly where we are, but within Manchester and wider areas, there are things called an Article 4 directive that can be, Article 4 direction that can be put on the conversion of properties into HMOs. And in a lot of the UK, a lot of these basically stealth asylum centres have been made by creating HMOs and housing 7 or 8 migrants in what was a 2-bedroom terraced house. This has been a tactic used in areas all over the northwest of England. And it's been used in areas all over the south of England as well. It's been used all over Britain. But in certain areas of Manchester, they have, and in a lot of areas you can apply for this as well. I believe it's part of the Planning Act. But you, if you have a friendly council, they can apply to make it so that HMOs can only be converted with planning permission. So that is a great way to gum that up because then people can object. And obviously in these areas where you know that these HMOs will become migrant housing almost by default because of the companies that are developing them, you know, if you can often prove that Serco or another one of these companies is already involved. And so the planning application will create a lot of discussion and a lot of objection. And that is a very good way of combating the dispersal of migrants into, let's say, into British enclaves, really, into places here that have not yet been ruined. And that has been one of the most successful things I've seen local groups do. So one of the things I'm hoping to organize with people I've been talking to, it's difficult because this has to be quite apolitical. A lot of the stuff that comes out of this, I'm hoping there is going to be some sort of national level anti-HMO organization, but we won't be involved in it. But it does need to happen.
Because it would taint it, basically.
This needs to be completely focused. It actually, having wider politics involved in it would ruin it. And that's one of the things I want to stress in a lot of this, and that a lot of these need to be kept away from
independent
sharp end politics, and especially party politics. They need to be presented completely neutrally, and they need to earnestly be about getting done what they're supposed to be getting done. They can't be, well, I'm going to Trojan horse this and then somehow revolution, teehee. What are you talking about? It's actually about making discernible improvements. You do things incrementally, prove that you can actually do things. And there are things that can be done. And one of them is quite simple, you know, what used to be considered the preserve of old people NIMBYs, but is now a way of very effectively protecting certain areas if you have a dedicated enough amount of people. And look, that's why the councils in Britain are being destroyed by Labour with the New Britain thing. Because with the whole New Britain initiative, these small councils that bring in these objections to HMOs will be absorbed into massive councils that will be these default Labour majority areas, because a medium population set of towns will be clustered together with a city, which will nullify their basically conservative now reform voting tendencies and will create a permanent Labour majority. That's the real plan there. And then all of this will be impossible because your council will be a mega council run by a former Labour MP, the Labour mayor. But them going to those lengths shows that this is one of the frustrating articles for the current government. Britain actually is that the tide is being held back in many areas by the Village Green Preservation Society, by, you know, the village council, the parish council, parish rules, you know, magistrates and governance boards, and, you know, the odd councillor here and there who's very sympathetic on town councils, but very local councils, very local government is one of the places where you can at least slow down the destruction of your area. And it has been quite successfully in many areas, and it's quite a good push. So that is something to look into. I hate to say Facebook, but Facebook is the best place to find your local anti-HMO organization, which will probably exist. So if you do nothing else, try and seek out and join your local anti-HMO organization. That is one positive thing you can do, because it is one area of push that has shown results.
I think something that should be considered as well with this, I'm guessing it's not just the government that engage or local councils that engage in the usage of Article 4, because this is an assumption, because I don't know this for certain. There's a church, a large one, organization in Manchester itself that effectively owns the local church where I live, and they worked to set up. I'm guessing it's an HMO. There's a house further down the road from where the church is that essentially has been housing since 2016. A handful of Syrians, some Africans more recently, and I wouldn't be surprised if possibly some Ukrainians as well. So I would imagine it's not just the local councils at the levels of the city or the local government. It might even be separate organizations that might be engaging in doing that. I'm just assuming.
Yes, there are as well. There are other NGOs too. That is more of a city thing, but it is becoming more common out in especially small villages. It's a strange one in that you get these obviously in big cities, but you also get them targeting areas they find or think are vulnerable. You will get that too. Just to mention here, this is in the book. It's also in the Substack. We had a little piece here from one of our mantras. The kind of our last mantra was deglobalize your mind. And in that, we do make just reference to going to the pub. And a lot of people have started getting mad at us for saying that. Oh, you just say go to the pub. But no, it's very important to actually, a lot of people are very atomized. If you are able to, if there's a local pub, it will probably be full of British people. And it is a good way to talk to British people of many different ages, of mostly a genuine background. It is people who are allowed to be in a pub and people who can afford beer and people who don't mind coming out to be around other people. So that's a good set of filters in the modern age. So a good local pub is a good place to be.
What I'd like to add to that is something rather interesting, which is, well, it's actually something I'd like to commission later today, which is to do with drinking, the ideals of doing, of what you should do and what you shouldn't do.
But drinking is
interesting, but it's specifically to do with alcohol and what it does to the body. What's very interesting is that when you're with your friends, actual friends, and you're drinking and thereby socializing, you release oxytocin when you drink. And drinking alcohol also increases the rate of oxytocin release, which is very interesting. Which is literally what binds people together. Again, you can think of the oxytocin to do with women when they have children, they breastfeed, they become attached to the child, less likely to kill it or neglect it, right? Interestingly, with men, the way that men bond is partly by, you know, taking piss out of each other, but usually it involves getting pissed, which is not something a lot of men do now. That's something that I think is interesting, especially when you and your Evelyn have said to go down to the pub and socialize.
Yes. Like I can't believe that people are objecting to our advice of socialize, and socializing a specifically, usually very ethnically British environment by default. Mm. It is a set of filters of language and disposition, especially if you're at a pub that doesn't serve food. If you're in a drinking pub, you know, what I would consider definitely a proper pub. I'm of the opinion. What are you guys? I'm of the opinion that a proper pub doesn't serve food.
It depends what kind of food, doesn't it? I would say it depends because if you think about some pubs, especially around where I live, I suppose it's a bit more middle class now than it used to be. But I mean, we've still got drinking pubs. In fact, most of them are that, apart from if you go back a bit further.
It's a sea of farmers
up in fields, like.
Oh, there's harvesters and green kings as far as the eye can see. It's tragic. Yeah, this used to be all local pubs around here, and now it's all green kings.
I can't name the pubs where I live because it makes it a bit... I don't know any other ones that sound
They'll be chain pubs,
the ones I've got.
Are they chain pubs?
No, they're not. Not the ones I am. Hold on, let's have a think. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4
Are they a bit,
4 immediately down road?
Are they independent,
are all just
like pubs, kind of bistro places? Then are they a bit middle class? But there's a few around here that
not
are
not really.
Nice.
No. Like one of them's considered more chavish. I've got 5, but one of them's a more of a restaurant. But the restaurant's in the back. So you have the back end that deals with food. You can have it in the front, but mostly it's for drinking. We've got loads where I am.
I told you, this is
something completely different, John. I said, look, if you want to like set up an event where I am, I'm more than happy to try and help organize that because there's loads of stuff around where I am.
I was going to say, well, within half a mile of my house, there's probably can't locate me by this, but there's 13 pubs, 6 bars, and a working men's club.
Yeah, we've got plenty of those.
And 6 restaurants with a bar, within half a mile, which is funny.
Mine's down the road.
That's
not even half a mile.
Within half a mile, there's 25 places that have a bar.
Damn,
including the restaurants.
That's cool.
13 nice pubs alone, but we do live in a very British area, and that is a very self-reinforcing cycle. And it's good to be in communities like that. If you live in a community that's not like that, if you are I know people don't like a lot of people don't like people coming from outside to their local pubs, and fair enough. But if you don't have local pubs, do travel a bit. And if you go for long enough, people will probably accept you as a regular, or basically as a refugee from a publess area. If you tell them there's no pubs around you, you'll get a pat on the back and a pint probably in a lot of places.
As long as you don't cause any problems.
Oh, no,
you don't cause problems.
Well, you don't cause problems. I don't think... no offence to a lot of our fans, but a lot of our friends are on the shyer side sometimes, I would say.
Well, it's just because some of the pubs where I am, there have been people from local town that have come in and they're like, oh, your lot are all inbred round here, and they just get walloped.
People coming here from other places like that, not friendly. But don't be a loud dick at a pub. It's not a good thing to be. But I don't really have to worry about that. I'm afraid our audience has an equal split of quiet engineering types, a smattering of trad wives and girlfriends, and I'm afraid a sizable chunk of sensitive young men. But we'll it's just, although there's an unfortunate spate of sensitive young men these days. But it is genuinely, instead of going to one of these stupid facial recognition protests and walking around as like an MLK cowgo cult participant, like trying to do the ceremony dance to make the white civil rights appear. Like a lot of people I know who were in London just went to the pubs and kind of like people watched in the pubs and had interesting conversation with certain people in the pub and didn't join any of the stuff that's going on there. And that's the better thing to do. Like literally going to the pub is more beneficial than protesting. Do not go to arranged protests. Don't do it. They are giant legal traps. You have to get permission for them from the police, and you basically lose a whole bunch of your legal rights by participating in them, especially one that is a march. So don't.
Yep. Don't do it. It's not worth it.
We've set up a legal pen for you to vent your political frustration that also means that you are much more easy to arrest. Well,
nothing will ever happen.
Yeah, have you considered that framing your activity not as a protest is beneficial to you? Excuse me, this isn't a protest, this is a function. This is the function with a lecture from a Shakespeare expert, from a half-Iranian Shakespeare expert. I don't know what you're talking about, officer.
Excuse me, sir, this is a Wendy's.
Yeah.
I'm drinking. Leave me alone.
Yeah. We've had reports of extremist literature. It's just Anti-Politics, Volume 1, The Elite. What? What's this? Like, Giovanna Mosca, managerialism. What? Again, don't be a spurg about it, but we try and use quite plain language, but there is a degree of technical language that's very neutral that you can use. That doesn't belie anything. It isn't like comedy wignat coded, but it is a very good description of how things work, and I found that's a very good way to talk to people. If you're talking, just talk to them in very plain terms, and you don't use waffle, don't use jargon, just tell them things.
Speak
how they are. There's a lot of these people.
As I would say it, just speak in plain English. Yeah. You don't use French words. Don't use German words. Don't try to sound like when you hear people on the radio. I have to listen to this on like radio. What is it? Absolute 90s or whatever. And there are these middle, like they're not, I won't even say the middle class. They're just pompous retards. I have to just say it. And they use, I can't even think of the words. They use French words, some Italian stuff, and I just think, you shut up, you feckless donkey. It really it boils.
Wait,
it's
a French word for this. It's just like, no, like, please don't be like that. You're like you become a parody intellectual, and nobody fucking listens to you. People tune out.
Yeah.
You know, tell them that, you know, somebody needs to be in charge, and somebody has to be in charge, and that somebody can't be everybody.
You have to have dictator or a king, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they know who's in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you're
that's
not in charge.
What political system is. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, if the prime minister's not in charge and we're not in charge, then who's in charge? You know, it's very simple.
As your supper pint.
Yeah. again, it's idioms. I don't know. We use a lot of aphorisms, I suppose. Things like saying the levers of power lead nowhere. But I think that's as simple as I can say it. That's like extremely plain English. And if you want to be worthy of doing something, you need to first kind of be a human being for a bit. Like, don't be an antisocial weirdo. That's another good piece of advice there. Like, don't be an antisocial weirdo. Don't. Have you considered not being? Because a lot of people seem to just revel in that, but you don't have to be. You really don't.
It's a life within a life, isn't it? So, which is I suppose that's not a double negative, it's a double positive, so it makes it negative, I guess.
Even my phone knows it's reported.
Hello, sir. I'd like to sell your new broadband.
I have. Have you had a head-on collision, sir? No.
Nah. It's just. I'm just thinking of the AA thing when he was like, "Who dares ring me?"
I will also advertise a few other things. Well, not advertise, but talk about a few other things as well. There is art being made. There is basically an entire distant art scene. We often, we've had him, we'll have him on the stream at some point. We need to get Alexander Adams back on, but we will be, we'll be attending this event. We'll be going to this this gallery, but we won't say exactly where we're going. We're not going to advertise exactly where we are, but we will be going to this exhibition. So, and there is art being, I don't like the font here, the font's kind of crap, but do sign up. It will have Alexander Adams. It will have, I think Fenn's in there. There's a whole bunch of other people in there as well. I'll put this in the chat quickly. Ooh, there it is. Add this to the description when the video's finished. But there is culture being created. There is art being made. There is discussion, a lot of discussion art going on. But it's more than just discussion. There is an art scene here. Which is interesting, and it's not awful. Like it's not. I'm not like an art person, but it's not awful.
it's in its gesture. I've seen some of it. It's not all to my taste, but it's in its gestation period. If that makes sense, it's just young. It's trying to find its feet.
Everyone's like, oh no, October 7th, very Talmudic. No. I think that's just because of the day it falls on. I believe that's like over a weekend. It's not a conspiracy, guys. That's Tuesday through Sunday, so that's like over a week. I suppose they could have had it start on Monday, but who wants to go to an art exhibition on Monday? I'm afraid that's just a 5-day period that ends in a week. I hate to be like purely coincidence, but purely coincidence. Don't get skits on me, chat. Don't get skits. Yeah, Oliver, I never forget. But I believe that's merely a coincidence. I hadn't quite clocked that it was. There's too many dates now. 9/11, October 7th. You know, they're trying to make October 7th a thing, and like I'm sorry, October 7th not going to be a thing. Like 9/11 was a thing.
No. Anyway, right. I think we need to get back a little bit back on topic again.
Yes, we do need to get a bit back on topic. Because a couple of things I want to talk about. There's the Pendragon Foundation, who are looking to help fix up and preserve all British buildings. I have a little bit of not a problem with their approach. I think their approach needs to be a bit more multi-pronged. Because what they're going for is there's an organization called D'Artagnan's, which has raised over 11 million euros through crowdfunding to restore castles in France. They have now bought and saved 3 historic buildings, such as the one below. Our ambition is to do the same in Britain. They're looking to kind of crowdfund, basically, restorations of country houses and things like that, which I think is quite a good idea. But it's also very capital intensive. There is another way of doing this, which is, again, a very NIMBY approach, but not to give too much information away, but when I was a child, I used to go to places that did like living history, and they were run by organizations that were community and volunteer organizations. And if you have a local country house, a local listed building that is empty, that is technically owned by the council, because that is the fate of many of these buildings that aren't preserved. Most of them aren't in, a lot of them aren't in private ownership, because a lot of them are private ownership worth having, because they can become prestige homes for basically foreign celebrities sometimes. If you have a mini castle somewhere, you know, you can try and flog that to an Arab. It is worth tarting up generally. A lot of these are commercial propositions sometimes too. But a lot of the buildings in limbo in Britain are owned by councils. Councils who don't want them, councils who don't fund them, councils who don't resource them. And so one of the things you can do if you live in an area that has one of these forgotten country houses or these forgotten places that isn't maintained and isn't looked after is you can form a community group and pressure the council to do something about it. But not only pressure the council to do something about it, put together a plan for what a volunteer group would do about it, you know, if the council would let them. And basically, a lot of people have had quite a lot of success getting these places renovated by basically insisting that they'll do it and the council's in their way. That works quite well because local residents generally go, well, why, you know, as long as you've got the permits, as long as you've got the plans, as long as you've got the people, and there are people who are quite good at filling these things in and getting all the T's dotted and the I's crossed. And you can, with not much financial resource, but with people resource and with volunteers and with people who have been, you know, plasterers or you can find people who are in their 80s who still hold skills for maintaining these things. It's a lot of it is that you have to find like the one guy who can still do the type of plaster work. But often, you know, you'll find that he has, you know, the impetus to do it because no one asks it to be done anymore. It's a lot of that, but it's a lot of these small, quite heroic community groups that, excuse me a second. There we go. Putting someone their time out. Go away. No spamming, guys. Excessive spamming will get you put in timeout. But you can actually get volunteer groups with a relative amount of, you know, sway over what happens to a building because they have adopted it. And there are ways to adopt these. Again, it's the councils, really. It is public ownership that is the death knell for many of these buildings. Many of these buildings being bought by the council or taken over by the council is a blank check for the council to let them rot because councils are incompetent. They're awful.
I can think of an estately house. There's actually quite a lot where I live in various places.
Swingfire, you're allowed to put Sneed because you don't do it very often. I do like your opening Sneed sometimes. You're allowed a Sneed. It's just excessive spamming. I don't mind the occasional Sneed. The occasional Sneed is okay. I also don't want to kill the chat rate, but no. What were you saying, sorry? You used to go on holiday somewhere?
No. I used to go on holiday somewhere. Now, there's a number of estately houses around where I live. And they were all, I think during the 70s, they were all bought out by local councils, and they were used them originally as places for the unions to go to, basically.
Oh no, I was guessing that these were going to be like, you know, some of them got turned to like scout retreats and things around here, but the unions, really? Wow.
Yeah,
that's even less wholesome.
The unions awesome. Yeah, so the unions were given them to use as event places, basically, for
nepotism,
end of year or stuff like that. Oh yeah, basically, yeah. Like the area I live in is
that's
coal
proper
and
socialist
glass work.
Yeah, that's proper socialist nepotism.
So the councils where I live still own pretty much own these houses. The grounds and I would say are not massively well looked after. The houses are reasonably looked after because they use them for like wedding venues and stuff like that most of the time because it looks very nice on somebody's
you could argue that there needed to be more public access to some of these buildings though, and you could also argue that the grounds needed to be restored to a more appropriate state, and that you could also argue that you know
absolutely,
that there should be more kind of public service living history stuff done in buildings like that, which is the arguments
I think
groups made around here, really, where I live. There's a few groups that around here that have done that with certain historic buildings and argued that they should be used for that.
Sorry.
Okay, go on.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, it's my apologies. I was interrupting when I shouldn't be. What I was going to say is that the houses around where I am are pretty much public access. You don't have to pay a fee to go into them.
Okay.
Certain parts of the houses you might have to pay for. but and they do have more of a historical site, so you have to pay a fee to go in. But a lot of them you can just walk in and just walk around the grounds. You don't have to pay to enter.
Oh no, that's the way it should be. But there's a lot of places where these buildings are basically abandoned, and then they're not open to the public because the council sees them as a headache. Especially places that are, let's say, less middle class, where people wouldn't exactly have the impetus to go to country houses. Or the edges of those areas, especially. You'll find that rural communities on the edges of un-Britified areas will really struggle because nobody wants to go to a country house near a council estate and an industrial estate in, you know, near Rotherham or somewhere like that. It is that simple. That some of these places end up in limbo because they end up on the edges of undesirable areas. That also happens too.
I must live in a really bizarre area that's like in a completely different just world then, because like the area I live in is essentially semi-detached council housing at one time. A lot of it's private now. But you've still got various people that have come from like coal miners here. So like working class stuff.
Yes.
That actually do go to those kind of places. So my area is just, it's just bizarre. My area is
weird. It's like some of the more affluent areas near Manchester. A lot of the areas near Manchester are like that, in that you have very well kept, very well frequented historic sites and historic industrial sites and things like that. They're very well looked after and have a lot of local people go there because these are, like you said, former council housing. They're all semi-detached houses, but they're all privately owned. But there's still a historic community there, but a load of rich middle-class people have moved in and injected cash into the area.
I'm not saying it's the middle-class people that have moved in. I mean, it's the working-class people that are descendants from the previous lot that still live in the area.
I'll say that your area's probably been buoyed by that. If it's all semi-detached former council houses, those will be quite expensive now. And the people who buy them will actually be quite middle class. You'll find those areas that are still quite
recently safe.
Yes. Because that's kind of the thing that helps save them, is that the council sometimes does buy themselves a bit more cash with a bit of gentrification. But it's also not the best process either, because you end up with Labour supporters.
I've seen that with the new housing estate that they've been building. There's a lot of interesting people that have been moving in.
Oh no! Well, another thing again to
interesting, not that colourful. I mean, just you know.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Arseholes.
Yeah,
I get what you mean. Now the another thing, and again, we're not just shilling our publisher. This is something we've been part of as well. In the off the back of the launch of Anti-Politics, our publisher Wifflings has been able to springboard that to have slightly bigger launches of their re-releases of all kinds of books that were no longer available, the most notable of which being Imperial Obituary by Major General Richard Hilton, which was a book that a lot of people were astounded by passages from when Academic Agent read them. He's put a foreword in this one because he's kind of brought this book back to public attention in certain ways, but there was a lot of demand for it and there were no copies around. So what has happened and what is being done is, I know people go, oh, theory sell and all this, but it is a genuinely good thing to revive old books that are very good. This isn't just a quote-unquote based book. This is a very, very crucial piece, I think, of alternate historiography about the breakup of the British Empire. It is one of the most well-sourced and well-argued pieces about the breakup of the British Empire, and that's why it was allowed to fall out of print. So I think things like this are vital in undoing the vandalism to history. And yes, we do have to compete in intellectual circles and elite circles because that's where change happens. In fact, that's where we've made some of the most inroads, I would think, is that there is a genuine effect with people who believe in the argument, because with certain, you know, if someone is earnest, if someone actually isn't evil, they can be, certain people can be argued with. Not many. And you will often find they are idealists in institutions, but certain people can be persuaded that what they've been told isn't right, or at least what they used to believe hasn't worked, which I think is the more common pathway, because it's very clear that the current reality is a failure of liberalism. But books like this are an excellent demonstration of that. It's not if you have somebody in your family who's a history buff, in quotes, who's they're slightly older, who loves English or British history, buy them this. It's on the surface of it, it's a very boring and quite dry and quite methodical history book, but it is a powerful account of the deliberate destruction of British global power. And it's ceding to the Americans, really. And also it's ceding to global capital. So these are good things that are happening. You guys bought the book, and it led to more books being able to be published, which then this has had a better launch than they thought as well. So, you know, they've been doing quite well with Imperial Obituary and the few of the other books as well that they've launched. But yes, dissident publishers are reviving dead books, and they're doing it off the back of, like, honestly, efforts of people like you. This is a great positive cycle that the community here has pulled off. Like, genuinely, I'm quite astounded. It's quite heartening to have that these are good things that are happening. We are publishing books. You are buying them. Therefore, we are able to revive more books, which you are then buying, which is great. You get books that didn't used to be in print, and, you know, the publisher gets to exist and be able to have some form of carve out. It is small, but it does exist, and it is completely run by our people. And that's more than most places can say, which I'm quite proud of all this. So, I'll stop waffling about that. I will also start waffling though, and very quickly though, I will also shill Lawfare: A Practical Guide again. If you're looking for positive practical solutions in a legal sense, this is a tailor-made guide for people, you know, on the political right, really. People who aren't leftists. It can work for anyone who isn't a leftist, really. If you're an anti-liberal of some degree, this is your guide to Lawfare. So I will once again put that in, because I've already linked with it anyway, but I will link that in the chat, because that is also a very good book. That's our stream there. I shouldn't have uploaded that. I'll just put this on. I've talked about this last time, but this is for big political action. We do kind of have our own. We've been talking about these solutions for quite a while. This is our condensed thing we talk about becoming a community, and, you know, you decide the actions you need to take, you plan them out, then you take them. That's the same everywhere. But this is for larger scale political action. I would say that there is a lot of small scale stuff you can do, but it is mostly, at least on the surface, apolitical. But that's where a lot of our thinking differs, I would say. I think our thinking differs because we try and push a lot more what people would consider apolitical solutions, but they're not. They're actually just solutions. And not politicizing things, actually depoliticizing them and getting things done, rather than trying to get politics done, getting things done. Because a lot of people be like, well, how does saving country houses, you know, further your cause? It's like, well, it saves country houses. I'll have to double check.
No, I'm here.
There he is.
Mute.
You're just being just quiet.
Mute.
There you are.
I'm being quiet. Patience.
You've been quiet as a mouse there. No. I was going to say, what are your top tips to people then? What's the advice you'd give people if they want to actually do something that isn't a LARP?
I think one of the things that tends to get overlooked, but tends to be pushed by people like Rorig Nationalist, because, and that's gonna be sod, and you have people like BAP as well that kind of push this, the sort of physical culture. I've been meaning to do some articles on for a long time now on a general idea I've had for a number of years, which is to do with what I would refer to as the tripartite of man. It sounds a bit, you know, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit of a
it's fine,
with
I know,
the name
I know.
And stuff.
We have a grandiose audience.
The idea is, I got the idea after I was reading the Bible, and it wasn't anything to do with Christianity or anything like that. It was more so to do with you have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. You have the three things, the Trinity. Instead of thinking it of that sense, I was considering the idea of the body, the mind, and the soul.
Yeah, mind, body, right? And soul. Yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah,
I know, the time of man.
Yeah, but it's the specific point that if the soul is not in good health, the mind is not in good health, and thereby the body is not in good health. But you can't heal the soul without getting the body healthy, then the mind. Does that make sense? You have to do it backwards. So if you're fat and you're overweight and you're not physically fit, your mind isn't going to be. So it's reciprocal, right? It works forward and backwards.
I get what you mean, in that people don't understand how much their physical health affects their mental health.
Mental and the spiritual. Well, that's what I mean, yes.
And therefore, their spiritual health, their metaphysical health, the way their mind works, you know, how they feel in the comfort of their own mind. Yes. You know, it is a huge thing. I've lost a lot of weight over the past few, I know, but the problem is I was on and off steroids at one point, not to do with the gaining muscle, but to do with the fact that medical steroids, as in prednisone.
Yeah.
Not as in Barry Bonds.
Getting buff.
No. I was rather ill, but I got a bit better. But I've lost quite a lot of weight over the past couple of years, and trying to get a lot fitter. And I do very long walks, things like that. Mm. I do exercise quite a lot, and I think that's a good thing to do. A lot of people don't. It's alarming how many people don't.
The specific point, and I did send this to you as well, which was to do with physical culture, which is something that, again, people like Ren and people like Bap, they pick it up, but they manipulate it in a specific way.
I think
way
what they do is
they
awfully sloppify it.
Yes. Absolutely. So I didn't realize for a long time, but the very concept of gymnastics doesn't come from Greece. You had the word gymnasium and Rome and Greece and so forth. But the gymnastics itself, like the process of going on, not hobby horses, what do you call them now?
It's the
benches.
Well, there's all kinds of stuff.
The benches. Yeah, all the stuff, and the rings and everything, the bars and stuff, right?
The accoutrements. All that gymnastic stuff that I do not know the proper names of.
Right, that sort of stuff. That comes from Germany during the late 1800s, or I should say part of the late 17 to early 1800s, and then it becomes more developed in the 1800s, right? Which is very interesting, especially when you start looking at how physical cult you have Hackenschmidt and you have Sandow, right? These were men that obviously talked about, and if you look into the history of them, they will mainly talk about their physical abilities, whether they bend bars or they pick things up and they throw them over their head, and it's like, whoa, it's amazing. kind of strongman lifts, right?
Yes.
What's very interesting is every single one of these men that was engaged in doing essentially circus tricks, every single one of them wrote on philosophy and politics, every single one of them. Right? To the extent that they had a concept of what became known as, to the point where they had like vicious debates about which style of physical training for a nation, thereby in essence the people itself, is actually beneficial to developing not just a physically strong body, but a physically strong mind and a physically strong soul. That is the extent that I think a lot of people don't consider. They don't consider that side because it's not talked about.
I get what you mean by physical. You mean strong soul, yes. Is in like a spiritually strong soul, as it were.
Yes. Something that is resistant to such a degree that no matter what punishment it takes, it resists.
The thing is, they have picked up a lot of this stuff. There's a lot of this latent feeling about fitness, about exercise, about diet, about the way people are, how slovenly people are, how undimorphic people are, how undifferentiated they become, like people blobs. You can't just tell. Yes. You can't tell people apart. Everyone's becoming undifferentiated soil blob.
Androgynous.
Yeah. Well, they're just they're like the people from WALL-E. If you the weird chair people.
Yeah. That's a good film.
We're proper in like WALL-E people. I hate to Pixar pop culture, but. We don't have that. That's like the last bit of like dying pop culture. We stopped making pop culture in like 2010, maybe, and nobody really noticed. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I want to say it was probably around 13, 14, well, I think.
You try and remember it and you go, okay, 2010 happens, and then Lil Jon goes, shat for a bit. He goes, shat, and then like LMFAO comes out, but then by that point it's like 2013, 2014, and everyone's bored of it, but no one's quite sure what's happening. Yeah, literally, like everyone's like, well, what was 2011 like? And it's just like Lil Jon going, shat, that's what 2011 was like. Yeah, Lil Jon just shot the shots,
and then he died.
And then there was like a mini other recession, and Nick Clegg did a little dance, maybe. I don't know. What did Nick Clegg do? I remember the coalition. What did Nick Clegg do? Like, what did Nick like do in 2011? Nobody remembers. That's the point. You know, there's all these news stories, all this thing about the coalition government, all these people so confused. What did Nick Clegg do in 2011? Nobody knows. What did David Cameron do in 2011? Nobody really. I don't think even politicos could name. Political people, name one without Googling it. Name one thing. Name one thing that David Cameron did in 2011. Okay, go on.
I could think of something. It wasn't the gay right, the gay marriage vote.
That was like 20.
That got passed through.
Was that 2011?
Was that 12?
I can't remember.
That might
you
be
know
12,
what?
That.
It might be 2013. No, that was the American one, wasn't it?
You might be able to have a look. Can we just have a look?
Hell. Well, when was the gay marriage thing? Was that 2011?
I think it was 2012. I want to say it's 2011, 2012. I think it went through in 12, but it was being discussed in 11. Top of my head. I could be wrong.
Hmm. Yes. No, it's all right. I was doing my exasperated radio host bit there. Don't worry. I could do my, you know, drive time radio host. You know, hello, folks. Welcome to the Scrum Power, where we're here today with Lewis. again, we were talking. Again, to bring it back around, we were talking about Verd and Kay and all like terrible phone calling. Like, you didn't grow up with radio. Radio really was like this. It's like, oh, it's, you know, it's now on to Mavis. Mavis, tell us about your trumpet. And it's like, oh, hello, Verd, and hello. I wanted to ask a question about the trumpet. It really is just like it sounds like disastrous filling time, but that's why people like radio.
It is
just people ringing in, you know, and having ridiculous accents, and actually they'll just put someone, you know, on an air with like a terrible, like a wagwam black mammy voice. You know, hello, me Vernon. A wagwam. The thing is, again, Vernon K would probably
shops, you know.
He'd do all that though. He'd be like mildly wigger. He was like Vernon K was like wigger light. I feel like I'm drawing you a picture of an elephant and you've never seen an elephant before. And you're like, are you sure his nose is that long?
Do you know, I probably got a feeling I might have heard some of his stuff.
I can't believe I'm now an old person for knowing who Vernon Kay is, but I suppose that's true. If you talk about Vernon Kay as someone who's about like 19, 20, they'll just look at you like you're stupid because they don't know who Vernon Kay is. I don't know, like,
look at you. You've gone out of somewhere. Sir, have you come out of the mental asylum?
Because what was his name? Oh shit, the radio host. I know Chris Evans is at least. Yeah, I think people were more famous in the past. You know, I know radio DJs from the 90s. I know Chris Evans because he fucking nonced Billy Piper. But married Ma nonce the Billy Piper story.
Wow.
Well, she was like a fucking jailbait pop star. That's how she got started. She was like fucking 15, 16 when she brought out like a single. It was one of the fastest, I think it was like the fastest selling debut single in UK history. And it was like outright like jailbait music. It was, I don't know, like pearl clutch about entertainment, but like looking back on all that stuff in the 90s in Britain, that was quite disgusting. There was a lot of pushing of like this weird like cult of jailbait. It was very, very like Billy Piper did also come across like a very vulnerable young woman. There's all this grubbiness in recent British history. We kind of forget about. We kind of forget how bad things have been for so long.
To be a bit cynical, we are governed by, you know, nonces and pedos. Let's be honest. That is the sad reality, isn't it?
Didn't even know. I remember anyway. But to sum up though, I don't think there's anything else that we've really missed here. We could talk at some point. We should talk about the fact that really, actually, the immigrants won't be replacing themselves come like the further generations. And
yes, but we could probably just touch on that right now, can't we?
Well, good news.
Very briefly.
Good news, everyone. Settled immigrant birth rates drop quite often to below native birth rates due to largely the fact that these people don't cope very well with a Western diet. Too much chicken shop, I'm afraid. And that's why a lot of these people also die in their 50s. Thank you for the $50 donation, Paladin YYZ. Bought book, read words. My love for Israel was inspired. have no doubt that this doing will find its way to the most moral military in the world. Great work, guys. Oh, shit, we nearly forgot our affirmations.
We didn't do the affirmations.
Oh, right, I'm sorry. Yes, the most legitimate, the only democracy in the Middle East. Let's have a moment of awed
silence. Hands together, please. Hands together.
Hands together, please. And rub hands together, please, for this.
Rub hands and pray. Yes, rub hands and pray.
Please all rub your hands together for the great nation of Israel.
Israel.
Oh, my hands are...
The greatest nation that is Israel.
Yes. God, I also don't have... I should have some outro music for you guys. Let me see if I can get my... Oh, God. I'm struggling to find my own music now. This is terrible. Here we go. Okay.
But just before we do this, I mean, regarding the demographic situation, I think... It was one of the realizations that I came to a couple of years ago was that although the only reason why the immigrant population is increasing is because they keep coming in, that they're not having children. I mean, it might look like it because obviously, oh, well, the schools, the majority of them have got mostly foreigners in the schooling system. But that's only in the areas that the foreigners are actually in. If you go out of side of those schools, there's very few of them. I think the largest, one of the most obvious increases in the actual population in terms of how many children are born is actually of mixed parentage. I'm thinking like, you know, you're an African and a European, or something like an Asian and a European, or an Asian and an African, or something to that effect, right? But it's very interesting that although they have, say, the most children out of basically everybody, based off of 2021 data, they only make up less than 1% of the population.
Yes.
So it's effectively insignificant. And then you have to factor in the, you know, you've got people of different broadly racial characteristics. It means the DNA is not completely 100% interchangeable between each other. Thereby, you are more likely to... This is going into Mr. Edward Dutton's...
Yes.
Various research and points to do with you essentially get mutant genetics that come out, not mutant genetics, that's not the right term that he uses, but I'll go with that. You get an increase in random mutations that cause deleterious effects down the line, negative side effects that result in the children being less fertile or less capable, essentially, of having children themselves. Which is just, I mean, that says everything that you need to know. And that's also not factoring in the fact that Bangladeshis and Pakistanis tend to have, they're inbred. That's, you know, the literal sandwiches. Like, I think there's no way to put it. You just got to be blunt. That's what they are. So they're not going to be having, the kids are not having kids.
On that note, on that blunt, that's a perfect note. Do you have anything to shill before we go?
There is my Substack.
Yes.
I haven't posted anything, like I said earlier, because there's quite a lot of stuff that I'm wanting to do. I just don't have the time.
I will share that as a community post if you do post there, though. So I will make sure to do that. But
yeah. Anything else? No. Nothing else I can think of. So that's it.
Okay. Well, have a good one, guys. I will modulate the thing here because I'm juggling a few audio streams. But yes, goodbye
go
from
to
me.
Pub.
Yes, go to pub.
Goodbye. Go to pub. Enjoy drink. Mm-hmm.